We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
It's always a little bit creepy whenever a large conglomerate of a bunch of big Fortune 500 companies come together and start to dictate bathroom policies.
More and more, God's word is showing up less and less in evangelical preaching.
Every person is going to see something wrong with their pastor. Now, why has the Lord let you see that wrong thing about your pastor? The answer is so that you can pray for them.
Every sin is a form of unbelief, where we do not believe that God's going to take care of us like he takes care of the birds in the air and the flowers in the field.
This is Chaplain Colonel Philip Hauser calling to say that all Christian patriots love doing push-ups while listening to Issues, etc. Carry on.
When the Lutheran Reformation began, it was a small thing in a small town, in a small state, in a very small region. It has become a worldwide phenomenon. There's no doubt about it. But Lutherans are still dwarfed by Roman Catholics and Anglicans. And some might say, well, 500 years since the Lutheran Reformation, has it been a success? Has it been a failure? What has become of the Lutheran Reformation 500 years down the line? What's the current state of Lutheranism in the world today? Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc., coming to you from the Old Latin School in Wittenberg, Germany on this Wednesday afternoon, August the 2nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about the current state of Lutheranism in the world. Dr. Al Culver, Director of Church Relations for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, will be our guest in the first half hour of the program. After that, Kristen Lang, Managing Director of the Old Latin School, will talk about this facility from which we are broadcasting, the Old Latin School in Wittenberg, Germany. Then we're going to spend some time with Pastor Chris Eskett, Pastor of Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Alexandria, Virginia, and 6th Vice President of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, talking about Martin Luther on the benefits of the Lord's Supper. Joining us to talk about worldwide Lutheranism as we broadcast from the Old Latin School in Wittenberg, Germany, Dr. Al Culver, Director of Church Relations for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Al, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
What is going to be, what has been so far, the take of liberal Lutheranism on the 500th anniversary of the Reformation?
Well, Todd, in one sense, you're in the perfect city to find out. We're here in Wittenberg. We're near St. Mary's. If you walk just a few minutes to the Castle Church and walk behind it, you'll see the Luther Garden, which is all these trees which have been dedicated by various churches around the world. At the very center of the Luther Rose, which is remade with these trees, the tree number one is the Roman Catholics. Then you have the Reformed, you have the Anglicans, and you have the Orthodox. So the heart of the Luther Rose and the Luther Garden is set up by all non-Lutherans. And then you have the ecumenical cloud over there, where they have these various exhibits from different churches. So I think this is the perfect city to talk about what the 500th anniversary means to a liberal Lutheran.
So a liberal Lutheran is not, how are they going to think of the Reformation? What is their, what's the story they tell about the Reformation?
Well, part of the story is that Luther discovered freedom and justice. And so Luther set us free. Now, freedom and justice are going to be defined in different ways. Gospel might even be put into that. But Luther set us free. He gave us the scriptures, which is part of this message of freedom and justice. And in one sense, he's incredibly successful. There's 850 million Protestants around the world. So Luther, in one sense, is the father of one of the largest churches, if you include all 850 million people in the world.
That would be second only to the Roman Catholics, I believe.
That's correct.
Since you've located us here in this place, and since this is where we are right now having this conversation, how would you describe the state of Lutheranism in the land of Luther, or what's called the land of Luther, Germany today?
Well, here it's we can talk about it pretty openly and honestly, but at the same time we don't want to turn off our friends here in Wittenberg, because the reality is they in this state of Saxony, only about 5% of the people each year are baptized. So 95% of the people in the land of Luther are not baptized, which is, if not a complete reverse, it might even, you know, it's a complete reverse from the time of Luther.
What do you think accounts for that? I mean, there's been a lot of intervening history in 500 years, but what accounts for a place that was once the vibrant epicenter of not only deep religious conviction, but also conflict after the Reformation? People would shed blood over the religious convictions, an apathetic religious standpoint in Germany today.
Well, usually when we're talking about what's happened to the church in the 21st century, we can pull out our favorite boogeyman, liberal progressivism. But for the city of Wittenberg, that's not where we have to go. If we want to talk about what happened in Wittenberg, where Luther walked up and down the streets, we can't ignore communism, the 70 years of communism, and really atheizing the people for two generations has done more to damage the church than anything that happened in the West.
Starting here and moving our way out, let's talk a little bit about Europe. Lutheranism had a heyday in Europe, especially Northern Europe. Where does it stand today?
Well, you know, that's kind of ironic, because you're absolutely right. In Northern Europe, it became the state religion. The kings and the royalty adopted Lutheranism. Denmark, which were Bugenhagen, we're just a few feet away from Bugenhagen's statue. And Bugenhagen went to Denmark. He brought the Reformation to them. Denmark, being one of these Scandinavian powers, brought it to Norway. From Norway, it went over into Sweden and Finland. You have all the Scandinavian countries becoming Lutheran. And up until recently, the single largest Lutheran church, at least church bodies, were found in Scandinavia, because they were one national church, where in Germany you had a whole bunch of individual Landeskirche or state churches, depending where you went.
That is now some of the most progressive, some of the most liberal. Liberal doesn't even qualify anymore, because it's left behind the kind of the classical values of liberalism. It's moved into something that's almost secular in its bent. Talk about that, the state of Lutheranism in the Scandinavian countries.
Yeah, in the Scandinavian countries, the liberal progressive values of the state have been totally brought into the church. The first Lutheran churches to ordain women were in Scandinavia. The first churches to accept same-sex marriage and even the ordination of homosexuals were the Scandinavian churches. The number of people who attend those churches are in not unlike what you hear at Wittenberg. 5 to 10% of people are going to church. The church doesn't really seem relevant or is connected to those people.
Some people might say, okay, I think I can see a common thread here, at least for European Lutheranism, and that is state churches, where the church and the state are mingled to such a degree that the church loses that battle every time. The considerations of the culture and of the state win every time. People become deeply disenfranchised from any kind of theology. Is that a good explanation?
Well, there is no doubt that the commingling of the church and state had a significant role in what has happened, but we can't forget that, for instance, let's take the example of the ordination of women. It's true that the state in Scandinavia, they opened up roles where women could have equal rights and take part in various jobs that were closed to them in the past. However, the state did not force the church to ordain women in Scandinavia. What happened was the church said, well, gee, look, the state has opened up all these jobs to women. Maybe we should open up the pastorate to women too. So in that particular situation, you can't blame Caesar for forcing the church. The church said, gee, we like how Caesar looks. Let us copy him.
So it was a capitulation,
yes.
A voluntary, completely willful capitulation on their part.
Absolutely.
Do the vestiges of classical Lutheranism, that is a kind of Lutheranism that either in whole or in part takes seriously the theology of the Lutheran confessions. Does it still exist in Europe, in Germany, the countries surrounding here?
Well, it does in pockets around Scandinavia, around Germany, around Europe. There are pockets of what you would call the, represented by the old Lutherans, what Hermann Zassa would call exclusive Lutheranism, with the LWF and more liberal Lutherans being the inclusive Lutheran types, so are affected by the Prussian Union. So yeah, absolutely, there are small groups, but what you're not in comparison, there, we're definitely under the cross.
You just mentioned Hermann Zassa, and I'd like you to talk about that, because he was one of these guys who came out of Europe in the 20th century, the 19th, 20th century, and he looked actually over to the United States, and he saw a kind of Lutheranism that he thought was a model for the world. Talk about him, and in a lot of ways, he was very prescient about what would become of Lutheranism in Europe, and also what would be the strength of Lutheranism in America.
Yeah, Hermann Zassa is an incredible individual. I had the privilege of being with President Harrison not more than a month ago, and we were down in Erlangen visiting the library, where we received permission to copy some documents of Hermann Zassa. So we, between Harrison and I, we copied 800 or 900 documents that really haven't been studied or seen by people before. So who knows, maybe there will be another Zassa book in the future. But he was an incredible individual, and he was a participant in the ecumenical dialogues in the early 20th century. He was a doctor. He went through the whole German academic system. He studied under some famous people. He initially went along with much of the higher criticism and the way that the German university system was going. And then he had a confessional awakening where he came to recognize that the Lutheran confessions are what help separate the Lutheran Church from all the other churches. And without a confession, without the Book of Concord, you will in fact lose the scriptures. It's one of these ironic things. We base our doctrine and teaching on the scripture alone. But if you lose the confessions, you'll lose the Bible. And this has been repeated throughout the history of the church.
What brought about that confessional awakening for Zassa? And I ask because someone who can have imbibed that deeply of what was essentially Enlightenment Lutheranism under the best teachers in Europe, for them to come to that realization, if it can be true for Hermann Zassa, it seems it could be true for others in that position.
Part of it for Zassa is he visited the United States and he saw another side of Lutheranism. You know, there's stories of Hermann Zassa visiting Union Seminary, for instance, and some of the things he describes almost fit these mega churches that we see today, where the preacher is, the spotlight is focusing on the preacher and directing everyone's attention. And he would talk about how they would play the music to get the congregation in the mood, and they had dimmed lights, and then the spotlight hits him, and now he's mesmerized the whole audience. And he's talking about this in the 1920s. it could happen today.
We're talking with Dr. Al Culver about the state of Lutheranism today, broadcasting from the Old Latin School in Wittenberg, Germany, on this Wednesday, August the 2nd. Dr. Culver is Director of Church Relations for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. More on the other side of the break.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
A year ago, my wife and I returned to America from 5 years of ministry in Karachi, Pakistan. I cannot adequately express how wonderful it was listening to Lutheran Public Radio's music broadcast each Sunday morning before church service. We still listen.
You can listen to Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the world, anytime, day or night, at LutheranPublicRadio.org, Amazon Echo, Google Home, and on the LPR mobile app.
Confessional Lutherans, we've got your back. You're listening to Issues Etc.
South Africa.
China.
Germany.
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world?
India.
Sweden.
Egypt.
France.
Turkey.
Japan.
Australia.
Canada.
United Kingdom.
Hong Kong. Austria.
Finland. Malaysia.
Singapore. Bulgaria.
Korea. Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines.
Mexico.
Spain.
New Zealand.
Kuwait.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
I'm talking with regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb about a new book by one of his former professors. Which one, Ken?
The late Dr. Kurt Marquardt, and the book is The Saving Truth, Doctrine for Laypeople.
You edited this book.
Yeah, the unpublished manuscript was among Marquardt's papers, and it is vintage Marquardt, lively, engaging, centering in the Christ who saves, with an apologetics chapter at the end.
You can find out more about Saving Truth, Doctrine for Laypeople at lutheracademy.com. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're broadcasting from the Old Latin School of Wittenberg, Germany on this Wednesday, August the 2nd. Dr. Al Culver is our guest. We're talking about worldwide Lutheranism. We were discussing Hermann Zassa before the break and his confessional awakening. He looks over here to the United States, and as you said, he sees a different side of Lutheranism. He sees American evangelicalism in its kind of nascent form, and he sees what it is in contrast to the Lutheran confessions. So today, what's the same about American Lutheranism when it comes to, in comparison to European Lutheranism, and what is markedly different about it?
Well, the first thing I think is America is, in one sense, an intrinsically more spiritual people than in Europe. And that's a nebulous sort of thing to say, but I think Americans are still more interested in God right now than Europe. And that's part of the question of why America is so much more, or maybe a little better off than Europe. And that might have something to do with the founding of the United States. I mean, think about it. We had a lot of intense religious people coming to found America. First, you got a group of people who are leaving England who want to worship. Of course, you've had the Spanish here before that who had a great mission zeal. And then you get a bunch of Lutherans who come over who want to do something different than what's going on in Germany. So the country was founded by people with deep religious convictions, and that may be a part of the difference between, you know, at least sociologically, between America and Europe today. But if you're going to talk specifically about Lutheranism and what Hermann Zassa saw, one of the tremendous things that we have in the Missouri Synod is a intense love of the scriptures and a belief that this is our source of life and doctrine and a deep commitment to the confessions. And these were the people, they left Europe so they could practice that and expand on that in the United States and do it freely without any kind of interference.
So he saw there a zeal for theology at the roots of a lot of American Lutheranism. They came here precisely because they wanted, what America was offering so many of the different confessions of faith, a kind of freedom of religion, but more than that, a place to ply Lutheranism unencumbered by the state.
Exactly. And one of the things that Hermann Zassa said repeatedly is that the Missouri Synod is the best hope for true world Lutheranism. And ironically, an LCMS president who thought that was John Bankin. John Bankin was the first American-born Missouri Synod president. Fotenhauer was the last German-born Missouri Synod president. So he marks a transition. And in some ways, he was a simple, pious man. He wasn't sophisticated in the sense of being trained by the various European theologies. Yet he had a firm commitment to the scriptures and the Lutheran confessions. And after coming and visiting Germany after World War II, he came to believe that the Missouri Synod was the best hope of what he said, quote, true Lutheranism in the world.
I want to talk about him for a while, for just a little bit, because it kind of helps us understand the survival of confessional Lutheranism. While he was in Germany and Europe, as you said off mic, keeping us out of the Lutheran World Federation. In the meantime, back in the United States, the tendrils of that liberal Lutheranism were finding their way into the Missouri Synod, weren't they?
Yes, exactly. And this is the irony. He's over in Europe resisting that, and at the same time, you have the very beginnings of what would become the Seminex faculty having been trained from Europe and other places. So it's an irony there.
So how was it that the Missouri Synod, before we move on to the other parts of the world, and other church bodies in the United States were able to avoid the temptations that had overtaken worldwide Lutheranism?
Well, let's talk a little bit about what happened after World War II and what the Missouri Synod's place in the world was at that time. You had World War II, which was a tremendously devastating war to Europe, to Germany. Of course, we had the Allies who also suffered greatly. You have the threats of communism, which this played into what we talked about a little bit earlier. Communism came in and basically annihilated Lutheranism in places like Russia and Ukraine and Kazakhstan and Eastern Europe, including Eastern Germany. That's part of what's going on. And there's all these refugees. And, you know, we talk about a refugee crisis today with the Syrians, but you had a huge refugee crisis right after World War II. So after World War II, we also, from the zeitgeist of the time, we have the formation of the United Nations. So all the nations are wanting to come together. You have the churches wanting to come together, the creation of the World Council of Churches. You have the creation of the Lutheran World Federation. And the Lutheran World Federation came together in part to help these Lutheran refugees. In the period between the founding of the Lutheran World Federation, 1947, to 1952, it's estimated that they spent about $40 to $45 million on refugee aid. And you have to adjust that by inflation. That puts it up about $500 million or something. It may not be exactly that, but it's pretty close. It's a lot of money. In contrast, the Missouri Synod by herself contributed about $25 to $30 million in refugee aid. So that's how involved the Missouri Synod was right after World War II in Germany with refugee aid. Part of that was theological. We printed things like Mueller's Dogmatics. We printed various theological tracts and books. In fact, Dr. Roland Ziegler, who's here in Wittenberg for the Luther Congress now, in part, he came to us because he went to an old bookstore, found one of these pamphlets and books that the Missouri Synod released during this refugee building time, and that's what helped him come to the Missouri Synod later down the road. So you could say we got Dr. Ziegler at Fort Wayne because of the efforts of John Bankin after World War II.
Let's move kind of around the globe a little bit to elsewhere in the Northern Hemisphere. Is there much to say about Lutheranism in North America outside the United States of America? What about Canadian Lutheranism?
Well, you know, the Canadian Lutherans, the LCC, Lutheran Church Canada, is a partner church of the Missouri Synod. It's very tiny and small. It holds to our confession. The counterpart is like the ELCA. In some ways, it may even be more liberal than the ELCA. It's a very small group of people in Canada. Again, Lutheranism under the cross. You go to North America, you have the Missouri Synod. We've talked about what's happening with the Missouri Synod and what its future might be. The ELCA, on the other hand, they're shutting down their institutions. We're here at the Luther Congress, and one of the things that we're hearing from the Luther scholars that came out of the ELCA is there's no money, our institutions are shutting down. Some of them said we spent 30, 40 years, and they're depressed seeing what's become of the ELCA. If you, of course, there's Wisconsin Synod and ELS. They're very tiny, but very faithful. And other than that, you have the North American Lutheran Church, which is in its struggle to kind of strengthen its own identity, wanting to be faithful to the scriptures and yet carrying a lot of baggage from the departure of the ELCA. It's hard to say exactly what's going to happen in North America.
What would you say of the Lutheran presence? Because you mentioned before communism. Obviously, the origin of that in the former Soviet Union, what kind of Lutheran presence was there before and now after that?
Well, you know, Lutheranism was one of the accepted official religions of the Russian Empire. So all the Russian territories, you know, obviously a lot of Germans went there. They had royalty who was of German descent in the past. Even in this town of Wittenberg, if you just walk down across from the castle church, you'll see a little sign and it'll say Peter the Great. Peter the Great was here in Wittenberg at the beginning of the 18th century because he was fascinated by Lutheranism, and he wondered if the Russian people could embrace Lutheranism instead of Orthodoxy. And it's shortly after Peter the Great that Lutherans start to come into Russia. So you had several million, maybe 4, 5, 6 million Lutherans throughout the Russian territories between Kazakhstan, Russia, and Ukraine.
In the East, the whole swath of the East, including China and Korea and Vietnam and all the places in that eastern seaboard, what is Lutheranism? What's happened to Lutheranism there?
Well, you know, Lutheranism in those areas came much later, and the churches are much smaller. In China, it's difficult to be a confessional Lutheran church because you have the Three Self Church, which is the national church of China. And so officially, you can't really be a Lutheran church in China.
Is it illegal?
It would be illegal, yes.
So what kind of presence is there? The numbers are staggering because the population is so huge, but what kind of numbers are there, would you say?
Well, I think there's maybe hundreds of millions of Christians in China. And they, just like all places, I'm sure they have different proclivities. Some are more Reformed, some might look more Lutheran, some might look more Pentecostal. But officially, they have the Three Self Church. And China's a bit, if we say if communism ever comes down, China's going to be the next huge mission field, for sure. So that's what everyone thinks.
Moving to the South, Australia is kind of an interesting story to tell about Lutheranism, isn't it?
Yeah, Herman Zassa and a number of Lutherans went to Australia, and that Lutheran church is facing struggles today. But originally, it was two churches, one that was more liberal, one that was more like the Missouri Synod. And those two churches merged, and now they're together. And we have some of the Australian Luther scholars here in Wittenberg today, too. One of the issues that is in front of them is, I think, result of the pressure of their culture, and they're struggling with, do we ordain women or do we not? This has been a huge debate in Australia for a number of years. And part of it is, they're trying to survive in their culture. The Anglican Church is there. They're scattered out. You know, there's not a huge number of people in Australia, so they're trying to figure out how do we survive there.
How about South America? What's the state of Lutheranism there?
Well, I think the largest church in South America is in Brazil. Our partner church is certainly a part of that story. The Brazilian church is represented here at this Luther Congress as well. I was in a seminar at the Luther Congress, and a colleague of ours from Brazil was there, our partner church, and it was kind of fascinating because, and I won't bore you with the paper and all the things he talked about, but what he did say, he asked them through the seminar, what do you tell people What do you tell people? How do you prepare people to die? And what do you tell them heaven's going to be like? And as I heard him ask the question, part of my scholarly mind, as I'm here with these people, thought, oh, that's not a good question to ask academics because they're not going to understand this. And then everyone just stared at him. And finally someone says, we don't talk to people about that. It was almost like he was naive. They were almost like, you little Brazilian are naive. But in reality, he was talking about what the life of the Christian message is. And what he wanted to do was bring in Luther's gospel or Luther's teaching on what our life to come would be.
Africa is really probably the story of the future of Lutheranism for a time, isn't it?
Africa is where the most seems to be happening. It's what we can see with our eyes. It's an incredible story right now.
What are we seeing there? How would you describe it in general terms?
Well, in general terms, you have all Christians in Africa are growing, particularly Lutherans as well. You have the Mekane Yesus Ethiopian Church growing more than 1 million people a year. The Tanzanian Church is not far behind. I don't know their exact numbers, but it's probably in the neighborhood of 500,000, 750,000. In Madagascar, that church is growing as well. More than one congregation a week. Imagine that, opening up more than one congregation a week. They're around 5 million. Nigeria is another place you have a large concentration of Lutherans. So between Nigeria, Ethiopia, and Tanzania, you're going to have a huge population of Lutherans over the next 20, 30 years.
There's struggle there too, because a lot of those nascent churches there in Africa had financial ties to Northern Europe, didn't they?
Exactly. So they're connected primarily to the Scandinavians, who historically were the best missionaries in the world. They went everywhere. And the other problem or connection with the Africans have is they have a financial challenge. They also have, what is it to be Lutheran? They're questioning about their Lutheran identity. And that's a big challenge for them.
Finally then, Al, what can you tell us about these global Lutherans reaching out to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod? Why are they doing it? What are they seeking?
Well, I'm going to go back to what Herman Zassa and John Bankin said. The Missouri Synod and the churches in fellowship with the Missouri Synod, the International Lutheran Council, is the best hope for true Lutheranism in the world. And the reason is we hold to the scriptures, we believe them, we know they're inspired and inerrant. We also subscribe to the Lutheran confessions, and this keeps us rooted in the Christian faith. And these churches around the world look to us and say, we want that. It's just as Jesus said, the sheep hear his voice. These other churches say, you have what we want, you have the truth. And so they're looking to us, and quite frankly, it's beyond our capacity to respond entirely to these various churches. And this is what it is to be the church under the cross. So you ask me, what's the state of Lutheranism after 500 years? Well, at the beginning of the 20th century, there was about 74 million Lutherans. If you go today, looking at the LWF statistics, it's about, you know, they might say it's 77 million today. Notice the numbers haven't changed much. What has changed is all the Lutherans today are located in the global south. And 170 years ago, they were all located in Europe and North America. And on one hand, that might seem like a depressing story. Yet on the other hand, what we're seeing is these people from the global south are starting to come and say to the people from the north and from the west and saying, you know what, you brought us the faith. We're thankful for that. And now we're going to call you to repentance, and we're going to bring the gospel to your lands now. And that's what I think we'll start to see over the next century.
Dr. Al Culver is Director of Church Relations for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Al, thanks for joining us to talk about worldwide Lutheranism. Thank you very much for inviting us out to Wittenberg this week.
Thanks, Todd. I'm so glad you could be here.
As we broadcast from the old Latin School in Wittenberg, Germany, in the next segment of Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, we'll talk about the old Latin School, its history, its place in the Reformation, and its place in the city of Luther today. Kristen Lang will join us, director of the old Latin School. Stay tuned.
¿Por qué hay cuatro evangelios? ¿Qué pasa con los bebés que mueren antes de nacer? ¿Qué significa temer a Dios? Respuestas bíblicas a preguntas difíciles se encuentran en la edición de agosto de The Lutheran Witness, una revista de la Iglesia Luterana, Sínodo de Missouri. Visite a cph.org/trylutheranwitness para una oferta especial. 6 ediciones para $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpretando a un mundo contemporáneo desde una perspectiva cristiana.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
People are talking about the Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Lutheran FCU was created solely to serve LCMS workers, families, and entities, and proceeds benefit LCMS organizations. Lutheran FCU offers deposit accounts and loans and has service access at thousands of branches and ATMs nationwide. Lutheran FCU also offers members Christian-based lending advice for new loans and refinancing, minimal account fees, and superior personalized service. Check them out at LutheranFCU.org.
The saints at Gethsemane Evangelical Lutheran Church in downtown Marion, Ohio, invite you to join us as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation, which He won for us in His perfect life, death, and resurrection. Sunday school for all ages begins at 9:15 a.m. with a divine service following at 10:30. Visit our website, Gethsemane-LCMS.org, or find us on Facebook to learn more about our confessional, historical, and liturgical congregation.
Casting Christ's net on the internet. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Is America going the way of the Roman Empire? A growing number of Christians think so, and I'm one of them.
Rod Dreher talking about his presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That's why I say that Christians today should take a new look at the way the early Benedictine monks, who emerged out of the ruins of Rome, responded to the collapse of their civilization. We can learn from them how to build stable lives of prayer, Bible study, and worship in strong communities. The Benedict option, as I call it, is not about running away from the world. It's about learning the practices of discipleship that enable us to stand firm for Christ against the world for the sake of the world.
You can meet and hear Rod Dreher making the case for the Benedict option at the Fall Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. Child care is free. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.